In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah, it's time to talk movies, all right, with Alan Adams for The Main Edge, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Hello, Alan.
Hello, how are you?
Wonderful, yourself?
I'm great, thanks. It was a phenomenal weekend.
Wasn't that pretty nice?
Yeah. Huh? I honestly didn't believe it until it was like, even when it was happening, I'm like, is this real? Am I going to wake up and it's going to be raining and 52 degrees again? But no, it was great. We actually were able to do some stuff outside. Sheridan did some, we're painting our porch.
Oh, good times.
Oh yeah. No, you know, it's there's a lot of around the house sort of, aesthetic maintenance that needs to happen. And, it's finally been sunny enough days in a row where we can actually do some of that stuff. So that's pretty cool.
Good for you. Buggy, but that's okay.
Yeah, like we do okay. Like there's usually generally a pretty good breeze around our place, so a lot of times it doesn't get super buggy. Although it did kind of rear up a little bit. I get the impression it's going to be a particularly rough season for the creepy crawlies. So yeah.
Stella had a good time, I'm sure.
She did. You know, and we're painting, so she had to stay inside for that part. Aww. So she's kind of mad about it. But we pulled out the porch furniture, and including her love seat, so she was able to come out, and we had cocktails on the porch yesterday afternoon and hung out with the dog. It was nice.
That sounds wonderful. Well, good. You deserve that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I think so, too.
Let's talk movies. You saw, too, this weekend. I had to share your tweet on the air earlier because... because it was so good.
yeah, it was not Hollywood's finest moment this weekend. We'll put it that way. What would you like to talk about first? Would you like to talk about the ridiculously underdone narrative featuring cartoon characters making nonsensical decisions, or would you like to talk about The Secret Life of Pets too?
God, I'm torn because, as we were saying earlier, nothing's better than when you don't like a movie. So, let's go with the good stuff. Let's start with Dark Phoenix.
Okay, sure. If anyone who's familiar with the sort of superhero milieu as far as movie going is concerned, is aware, this is basically the 12th X-Men movie. Which is, you know, it's kind of staggering to think about, but the first one was the year 2000. Like that was, nearly a decade before Iron Man landed and the MCU kicked off. Like, you know, the first Spider-Man was released right around that time as well. Like it was the first sort of foray back into superhero cinema after the whole Batman franchise kind of crashed and burned there in the 90s. I don't know that there's ever been a major, certainly not in the 21st century, a major like Hollywood franchise that was as uneven as the X-Men series. Because the first couple were pretty good. The third one was a really terrible movie that has plenty of connections to the terrible movie we're about to talk about, which is kind of funny. And then it's sort of, they sort of revamped a little bit. They did a sort of time travel, like reboot alternate thing that worked for a while, and then that started to fade out. And and then of course there in the middle you have a couple of Wolverine standalone movies, including Logan, which might be the best comic movie ever made. Like I would certainly feel comfortable if someone wanted to make that argument to me. And then we land on Dark Phoenix, which is the sort of final installment in the Fox X-Men series. Like these characters will be, now that the Disney merger has happened, these characters I'm sure will be folded into the Marvel Cinematic Universe in some way, shape, or form. It remains to be seen how that's going to be done. But the reason I mentioned the connection with the aforementioned X-Men The Last Stand, the third movie in the franchise, is because it was also terrible, and it was also telling this exact same story. The Dark Phoenix saga is one of the most iconic X-Men storylines in the history of the comic book. I would argue one of the most iconic storylines in comic book history, period. And the fact that they have made this movie twice and screwed it up so badly both times is just astonishing to me. I'll give you the blowdown, such as it is. In this, where it's 1993, Charles, Professor Xavier, played by James McAvoy, has gradually eased the X-Men into public eye. They're becoming more and more accepted by humanity, and now the X-Men team is sort of they're a superhero team. They go and help people when there are no other alternatives. And so, the usual human versus mutant sort of clash is very minimal at the beginning, although, as per usual, all it takes is a little something, and then all of a sudden we're back to hating mutants. But anyway, so the team, led by Hank McCoy, played by Nicholas Holt, and Mystique, played by Jennifer Lawrence, take the team into space to rescue a space shuttle that's had a malfunction. Great. So the X-Men are up there doing stuff. And then Jean Grey, played by Sophie Turner, has to use her telekinesis in an effort to save the last astronaut. And then something mysterious happens that's not particularly clear. It's ostensibly involves a solar flare, but we soon learn that it's far more than any solar flare. They return to Earth. Heroes welcome. But it turns out that Jean Grey, something's not quite right. She's becoming confused. Her powers are increasing greatly, and she's losing control. And so she reaches out for help, and in the process of doing so, accidentally hurts some people, and tries to make her escape and kind of seek out help elsewhere. Elsewhere includes Magneto, played by Michael Fassbender, who's currently living on an island because that's what we're doing now. He lives in a mutant sanctuary called Genosha. Things start to spiral out of control pretty quickly. Oh, and also there are like shape-changing aliens led by Jessica Chastain.
All right.
And then, I could try to go through it, but it's remarkable the combination of convoluted plot and utter boring nothing that this movie brings to the table, like just huge stretches where nothing happens. And yet for me to try to sit down here and explain what happens to you, like we just don't have that kind of time.
And it doesn't sound like we need it.
No, I think I think we've pretty much sort of locked it down. Now, the thing about this storyline is it's this huge epic arc. And every time they try to jam it into like a 2-hour movie, and it just doesn't work. Like the scale of the thing doesn't click in that way. And it's like, the first time around, fine, I get it. No one really knows how this works. But this time, it's like you just spent like 15 years watching Marvel tell an overarching story over the course of multiple films. Do that. Like, just do that. Like, that's clearly the way this story needs to be told and will probably wind up being told by the Marvel folks when third time's the charm and they actually get it right. Look, this the effects work meh. Like, there's not a lot of really interesting stuff going on. The decisions being made by the characters don't make a lot of sense. Motivations, relationships, none of it means anything. McAvoy's trying. Fassbender less so. Nicholas Holt's also kind of like, well, I'm here. And everybody else, there's some young actors that are okay. Ty Sheridan's pretty good. Cody Smith-McPhee is fine. Alexandria Shipp. But we need to talk about Jennifer Lawrence because, Jennifer Lawrence, brilliantly talented actress. She could not have wanted to be there less. every frame of film that she appears in just drips with contractual obligation. Seriously, Rich, she might as well have been holding a newspaper with today's date and talking about how well her captors are treating her. Like, it's like everything she does is like a proof of life video. And I just want, I want this movie to be good. I understand why she wants out. Like, she's done. She's done with all of this nonsense. But it's just like to have it so blatantly obvious. Like, you don't get that opportunity very often to watch someone really just like, phone it in because it's like, I'm here because I made a terrible error in judgment 10 years ago. You're going to get it, but you're going to get the bare minimum. I Sophie Turner is fine. What you don't want? Sophie Turner carrying your movie. You know, like I just like again, fine. Like I don't think she's a terrible actress, but it's like you know, the example I would use is would anyone want Sansa Stark to be the star of Game of Thrones? No. No, you don't want that, because here's the thing. She's fine in small doses, but when she's up there on the screen for extended periods of time, you wander away. Like I certainly checked out. And it seems like a lot of other people did too, because some people just checked out before they even checked in, because this one appears to be on its way to being easily the biggest flop in the history of the franchise. They did what, 33 million I think this weekend, which is, I don't know, I think maybe half of what they were hoping, and it's only going to go downhill, because I can't see any sort of momentum being generated by this, because it's not good, Rich.
I sensed that early on. Let's move to Secret Life of Pets Deuce.
You know how the expression, you can't teach an old dog new tricks? In the case of this movie, that is accurate, because these are the same old dogs, and there are no new tricks. Like, this is pretty much the same movie that the first one was. Like, it's, you know, adorable, like, anthropomorphized cartoon animals doing stuff, like silly jokes, sight gags, stuff like that. But the thing about it is, it's okay. Like, that's okay. Like, this is, like, Illumination, the studio there that made this movie, they do, Despicable Me is theirs, the Sing movies. Like, they're very aware of what they bring to the table. This isn't Pixar. They don't want to be Pixar. Like, they're, this is not, working on multiple levels sort of movie. This movie works on exactly one level, and it's about 5 years old, which is okay. I think there's plenty of room for movies like that. The biggest issue is, this movie comes off as basically like, they basically had a brainstorming session in the writer's room, and they had like three or four like half-baked ideas, and they just were like, you know, it's like they looked at their watches and they're like, oh well, the bagels are going to be here soon, and they just jammed everything together and said, yeah, this'll work. And so you've got all these weird disparate plot lines. You've got the dogs spending time on a farm. That would be Max, voiced now by Patton Oswalt, due to the rather icky departure of Louis C.K., who voiced the role the first time around. So it's Max and Duke, voiced by Eric Stonestreet. Their owners, who now have a little baby, take them to the farm. So they go out on the farm and go and, you know, learn what it's like to be city dogs, out in the country. They meet a tough farm dog named Rooster, voiced by Harrison Ford, who is here for reasons that escape me. I don't know, maybe he was like, oh, I guess I gotta make movies for my grandkids now or something. Who knows what he gets, why he makes the decisions he does, but he's here. You've got a second plot involving Gidget, who is Max's girlfriend. He left her in charge of his favorite toy, which she loses in the apartment of the crazy cat lady who lives downstairs, and so she needs to enlist the help of their cat friend Chloe to learn how to be a cat, so she can go in and rescue the toy. And then we've got the story about the rabbit, Captain Snowball, played by, voiced by Kevin Hart, who's enlisted by a dog named Daisy to help her rescue an infant white tiger that is being held captive by a Russian circus owner named Sergei, voiced by Nick Kroll.
All right, I'm in on that.
Right? But it's like, those are three very different stories, and they're all just sort of told in parallel without any sort of overlap. It's just like they're just cutting from one to the other, seemingly at random. And again, by the time we get to the end, they've ostensibly sort of united the storyline somewhat, but really it doesn't make a lot of sense. But the reality is, it doesn't need to make a lot of sense.
No.
Like, it's just like, we went to a screening, and just full of kids who were delighted by everything that was happening, you know, and it's just dumb, like, dog jokes, like, yes, and, you know, cats doing cat stuff.
Yeah.
And it was just, it's sweet, like, not a great movie, And that's okay. It's certainly the sort of movie that you know, your kids are going to enjoy. You know, there aren't the winks and nods that you get from some of the more quote unquote advanced animated fare. But sometimes, you know, sometimes you just want a kid's movie that's a kid's movie. And if and if you've got little ones who dig animals and their antics, you could do a lot worse than The Secret Life of Pets too.
Sounds good. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Have a great night.
You as well.
Alan Adams of The Main Edge talks movies with us every Monday here on Pass the Popcorn.